You're listening to The Vitals, a monthly podcast for all things oncology nursing. For even more content, check out oncnursingnews.com or find Oncology Nursing News on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. There's an ongoing misconception that people are born resilient or they're not, but that's not true. In this episode, Lauren Winters, an oncology nurse practitioner at Massachusetts General Hospital, discusses how yoga, mindfulness, and meditation can build resiliency in clinicians and the patients they treat.
Mindfulness is essentially a tool amongst many to build resilience. You know, it is an Eastern concept, right? An Eastern practice that goes back probably thousands of years. And here in the West, we've sort of adopted it more recently, but in big ways, ultimately. And now, you know, even in my career, it's just amazing to see these terms being used so freely now, even from when I started here in oncology, where, you know, a lot of people didn't know really what yoga was or understand it, or could cancer patients do it? And now, you know, there's a plethora of options that exist both, you know, through medical centers in there, if they have an integrative therapies program like we do, but also out there in the community. And now, of course, virtually in droves. So the access has been like viral, which is really great. There's a lot of options in terms of doing mindfulness practices. And I think this idea of resiliency has just started to, you know, emerge. I don't think people quite still grasp what that is. But if you ask someone to describe someone they know that is very resilient, they can easily do that. So it's sort of trying to put that together now. It's not just about mindfulness, but it's also about how you take care of yourself, like the basics, sleep, good food, exercise, being with others who are building you up, that kind of thing.
And on the provider end of things, I was writing an article last week about, you know, mindfulness from the nurse perspectives. You know, we have these nurses who are really giving their all to treating these patients. And then we add on the layer of a pandemic, you know, clinicians are getting burnt out. Would this be a good strategy for them to employ?
Absolutely. And, you know, we've been fortunate here at MGH as that's been really in the forefront from, I'd say, the very onset of the pandemic. We have a wellness program for clinicians that has offered a multitude of a menu of different tools that folks can access if they wish. I think, you know, the hard part is you give too many tools, it's like, just too much. It's overwhelming. When you're feeling burnt out, you also tend to feel overwhelmed. And taking one more thing on may seem like, you know, really just too much. Whereas, you know, even just the simple act of taking a breath at different points in the day can be a really surprisingly powerful strategy. And I almost wish that was sort of built in a little bit more to our culture, because most of my colleagues don't even take time for a meal in a work day, much less taking a breath. So, you know, maybe it could be the start to work meetings, you know, okay, everybody, before we start this meeting, let's just put our feet on the ground. Let's just take a slow, deep breath and check in, and then we can proceed with the meeting. I would love to see that start to be part of the culture. And I think in some workplaces outside healthcare, that is. I hear it from my friends who work in other areas, but it's strange that we don't see that in healthcare. You'd think you would. So I think it needs more work to get into the culture in a way that healthcare providers give themselves permission to stop what they're doing and do a little self-care, so that they can go back to the patients and truly give their all. Because the reality is, if you're burnt out, if you're exhausted, you're not going to be able to give your all. And then you get home and you've got nothing for yourself, nothing for your family. And that, you know, I know is going on in my institution, as well as I'm sure all across the country and the world right now. So, you know, it's going to take some more time and work to get it out there. But I'm hopeful that that's happening. And the fact that this is even exists, like a wellness for clinicians, like a whole department that just is focused on that, is a big step. So
And I know that people have the misconception that you're either resilient or you're not. You know, you're born with resiliency or you're not. And, you know, we've heard a lot of people speak and say that's not true. So can you talk about that misconception a little bit and what people can do to build their resiliency through mindfulness practices and, you know, other things that they can do?
There's personality traits. I put together a list of those personality traits, which are associated with sort of maybe innately having resilience. You know, those easygoing people, they use humor well, they tend to enjoy recreation, they tend to be pretty organized, they're not sort of all over the place. You know, also, there's obviously some conditioning going on, depending on, you know, how they grew up developmentally, as well as, you know, did they have their needs met growing up, that sort of thing, you know, the basic needs. Were they in a supportive, loving, you know, family? All of those things can contribute, as well as those sort of personality traits, and then socioeconomic factors and such can contribute. But it's definitely true that you can develop resilience by the use of tools and practice and self-care. And that's where, again, it comes in, that you can never underestimate the power of eating good, nutritious food, like feeding yourself the right stuff, the right fuel at the right times, in the right manner, right? Not on the go, not shoving it down, not guzzling down the coffee, but you just actually take 5 to 10 minutes for the meal. You let it digest, you just pause. And then, you know, obvious, like sleeping and trying not to work until the wee hours of the night, and then asking yourself to get up 4 hours, 5 hours later and do it all again. It's just ultimately going to wear away at anybody, even maybe those folks who have those personality traits. It just wears away at your bandwidth, right? And then lastly, exercise, recreation, right? Those tools of attending to one's body, like this machine, really is important for building resilience. So I think, you know, those three things on top of or and addition to, if it's not sort of easy for you, seeking out practices, saying, hey, you know, I've heard about this thing called resilience. I want it. How do I get it? And maybe you just find yoga, you know, allows you to find that balance between movement and breath, and it just comes together. Maybe it's meditation, maybe it's forest bathing. I mean, maybe it's whatever, prayer. I mean, it doesn't have to be any one thing is right or wrong, but you find it. I have a good friend who did yoga, did meditation. She did all kinds of things, studied it all for years, but she still had terrible anxiety. Well, ultimately, she found that doing pranayama, which is a breath practice, breath control, is what really helped her with her anxiety, which, you know, for her is what ultimately is going to make her more resilient, a more resilient person, right? She's not going to be so reactive. She's not going to freak out with every little thing. And so, you know, it's not necessarily true, right, that any one thing is going to be for everybody. And you may have to be a bit of a seeker if it doesn't come easy for you. But if you're open to it, it's there, and it's just going to be a little trial and error.
So tell me a little bit about the resources that you spoke about in your presentation and what clinicians, really everybody, can look for and how to find those.
The Benson Henry SMART program, I don't believe, is limited to MGH. Anybody who's interested in taking the SMART program, especially now that it's virtual, can look into that program just by going on the Benson Henry Institute website and see what options they have available, you know, what would work for them. But that's certainly now something that, you know, anyone could access potentially. And then the others, of course, are more resource lists, right? So the ones I mentioned were websites off of some of the folks that I talked about, right? Like Tara Brach has a website, and she has guided meditations on there. I mean, honestly, when I was doing this research, I mean, the list could have been like 10 pages long. There's just so much out there. It's almost too much, right? But I think if you're just looking for like a little taste of it, And you want some structure and you want it to be sort of packaged up neatly in a little nice little box, then using something like the Headspace app, I think is a really nice, easy, you know, free initially foray into, you know, what is mindfulness? They do a lot of nice introductory talks that are short. You know, you don't have to sit there for 30 minutes, like what this is and why we're doing it. And that happens every day when you do the meditation. He or she, you can get a female or a male voice, does a little intro. Here's what we're doing and why, and then the practice. And I love that because it's like, you don't have to swallow it all at once. You can take little bites every day. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And you start to get it over time. And then you also have the benefit of doing the practice, which can start out as little as 2 to 3 minutes. Everybody has 2 to 3 minutes a day. And then you build up, like you start to do 5 minutes and then maybe 10 minutes. And then you can go on and do, you know, 15, 20, 30 minutes if you want, or you can just stay there at the 2 to 3 minutes. So I like those for those folks who are just sort of like, just want to take a little step.
Yeah. I love the Headspace app. I have it myself, and they launched a Headspace like show on Netflix, and the end of every episode has like a 5 or 10 minute meditation. And that guy's great voice.
Yes. He's a really interesting story. It's worth looking. Yeah. I don't know if he talks about his story, but yeah, it's really, I think that's a great one. I like what they've done. Yeah, I mean, it gets crazy, right? Because there's a bazillion podcasts. There's just so much. I mean, again, I could have listed 3 or 4 more pages long of things I've come across, things I've used, but I just tried to keep it to one slide.
So my final question, you're a yoga instructor as well, right? So you're really practicing what you preach. So that's awesome. Yeah. Has that affected your career, your time with patients, and, you know, how do the two things go together? Because at first you might think they're very separate, but everything we just talked about, I don't think they are.
Yeah. So right on. So I came to yoga like probably in graduate school, college graduate school time, more as just sort of wanting to do something to get flexible and strong and whatever. It was sort of just more physical oriented. But I had a few teachers who really would speak to the philosophy behind yoga, the tradition, and it really sparked my interest that I felt like, well, I'm doing this all the time and I don't really know why. Why do I feel the way I do? Why are we doing it in the way we're doing it? I don't understand. And I'm just sort of one of those people that can't settle for that. Like, I need to kind of understand it. So I felt like it was a good time to just do a teacher training. I figured just with the intention of learning about it. And really, unfortunately, once you do something like that, it's never the end of the story. It just sort of opens up this whole nother world and community of awesome people that I met that taught me more and more and more and just lead you down a certain path. So I found that whole community side, which is really enriching as a nice balance to my sort of medical community and colleagues, to have this sort of maybe separate interest. But ultimately, that didn't set well with me either, as I wanted to bring it together. And I was able to, early on in my career as a nurse practitioner, propose a research project with our cancer center yoga therapist. She was awesome and was totally willing to do it with me. And we did a little pilot project where, before, you know, kind of YouTube was freely available and all this online videoing, we made a video filmed like with a camera for breast cancer. We tailored it to breast cancer patients. I worked with a physical therapist, another nurse practitioner who was in the surgical realm, you know, our yoga therapist, and we tried to build out a practice that we thought would be safe and effective for some of the discomforts associated with breast cancer. So I applied for a research grant. We got the grant. We did that. We ended up being able to successfully, you know, do this project. And again, this is before it was so easy to do stuff like that. It's just a few years before. And then we were able to publish that research in a a peer-reviewed nursing journal. So it was able to come together in a really cool way. And not just that, but provide an intervention for our patients, and also a taste of what yoga can do. So maybe they didn't do that practice forever, but maybe they did it a couple times and were like, yeah, I can do this. I'm going to go and maybe check out a class and try this out because maybe it could help me. So that was the idea behind that, was just to sort of demystify the yoga practice and bring it to them rather than them having to come in. Because at that time, all of our integrative therapies, patients had to come to the hospital to receive. There was no virtual, there was no, you know, telehealth. It was either they drive all the way into Boston and get it or they don't get it. So my thought was, that's not right. We should be able to give it to them, which I know you're laughing because you're thinking, that's so easy now. It was not easy then. And so anyway, we were a little ahead of our time, but it was the start of really, I think, seeing how useful it is to be able to meet patients where they are. I mean, physically where they are. And now, you know, we're continuing to do projects like that. The Integrative Therapies Group has done quite a lot here. And I'm continuing to do as much as I can to sort of bring these two realms together in my professional world, but then also maintaining my own yoga practice on, you know, my own time, which I think has helped me alleviate the symptoms and effects of burnout, which are real. And even if you do yoga every day, you're still going to feel it in the middle of a pandemic. It's just really hard to get around, but it's definitely helped me stick with sort of my self-practices and feel energized when I come in and do the best that I can. And I can't imagine having gone through this pandemic without having that yoga practice. It's just like crazy to me because I know I probably would have burned myself out a long time ago.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Vitals. Be sure to never miss a beat with Oncology Nursing News.